Hey, it's At the Letters, presented by Miller Lite, the original light beer. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson Smith. Our producers are Christian Ryan, Mike DeSoni. Today is Thursday, May the 6th, recording post-game, Ben. And maybe because it's just, you know, I just wrote this, so it's just very fresh on my mind. But like, if you can kind of pull back on the Blue Jays season here and kind of like see the forest for the trees, there's like a tree here that is the George Springer, you know, will he, won't he debacle. And there's like a tree here that is like David Phelps starts warming up for the game and doesn't even get into it and goes on the IL. And there's like, you know, a tree here that is like Nate Pearson, you know, adductors, setbacks. But you look at the forest and it's like, oh, the Blue Jays are 2 games over .500 and are fourth in MLB in run differential right now and have all kinds of good stories up and down the roster. Like in the totality, things are going okay.
They are going okay. It is a weird time for the Blue Jays in that sense because there's a lot going on. Always the case when you've got 162 game season, so many different players, so many different prospects to watch now, that the minor leagues are underway again. So there are tons of angles, some good, some bad. And with the Blue Jays, the focus in a lot of cases this year has been around George Springer, and it hasn't been a good start. It's been a very disappointing start for Springer's Blue Jays tenure. And yet, as you say, to be 16-14, they're in a good spot. They've got a chance to build on that a lot going forward. They still have a ton of questions around this team. I still think, you know, the rotation, third base, there are a lot of ways they can improve and need to improve. But big picture, they are definitely in a pretty solid spot.
Yeah, George Springer was kind of in this weird, murky middle earlier this week where he wasn't injured enough to be on the IL, but he was not healthy enough to play, even as a designated hitter. So it was very much like, all right, so what is even happening here? Like, how do we proceed? And I think even the Blue Jays were pretty flummoxed by it. And, you know, it's important to remember that George Springer, 6 weeks ago during spring, was just like playing games and hitting home runs in Grapefruit League games. And then was just like, hey, you know, my side's kind of tight. Like, I don't know, I got some sort of weird ab thing going on. And they sent him for an MRI and they were like, dude, you have a grade 2 oblique sprain.
Yeah.
strain. Excuse me. I always screw those up. And he was like, oh, word. Like, do I? The guy's just got a high pain tolerance. And the guy's just able to play through a lot of things. So I think that this whole kind of odyssey that the Blue Jays and him and us in the media kind of went on this week with his status and what was going on with him and what was the scheduled day off and what was hurt and what was fatigued and going on the IL, you're not going on the IL. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that like the guy might feel fine playing through like an injury that somebody else might not feel really fine with. And I think the Blue Jays are pretty deferential to George Springer wanting to play and wanting to be on the field with his new team and maybe being able to carry an injury that others wouldn't. But ultimately, we arrive at this situation now where the club really has to back him off and try to figure things out here so that he can be as healthy as for the rest of the year.
It's been rough. I mean, I think that, you know, to look at this first 5 weeks of George Springer's Blue Jays tenure, there's nothing good about it. There's absolutely nothing good about it.
470-foot home run's pretty cool.
Okay. So
he had two home runs in one game.
So there's one game. Yes. He had one really good game. And honestly, it might have been the difference between a win and a loss. But broadly, if you were to, you know, again, take that zoomed out view, it's not good. It's not good. He has obviously missed almost all of the season with the oblique and then now with the quad. They brought him back in hindsight at a speed that was too quick. You know, he wasn't in the end. And at the time, they made the decision knowing what they knew. But in the end, it proved to be a decision that didn't pay off and didn't work out for this team because now he's back on the injured list and needing more time to rehabilitate that quad. So these things happen. It doesn't change Springer's overall offensive profile and what he's able to bring to this team because, you know, he remains an incredible offensive player and nothing that we've seen in the course of these 5 weeks as he's battled some injuries and, of course, missed almost the entire season. It doesn't change the fact that he is still an incredible offensive player, someone who should bring the Blue Jays, in addition to that 35 home run bat, some really good defense in center field as soon as, you know, maybe a few weeks from now. But still, you know, for any Blue Jays fan who's frustrated by this, who wishes that they were seeing George Springer, totally understand. It's been a very disappointing start to his Blue Jays tenure.
Yeah, I just don't think there is like any sort of conspiracy here over what happened. Like, I think the Blue Jays worked with the information that they had and worked with what the player was telling them, which was that, you know, like, I'm feeling good, I'm ready to go. There was like a plan in place to get him back to playing center field. Like, there was a progression there. He wasn't supposed to be just DHing as much as he was when he came back. It was supposed to be like a game or two of DH, and then they're going to get him out into center field. And he just wasn't able to follow that progression. But it's like, it's important to remember as well that, like, you know, we're dealing with a soft tissue injury here, right? So soft tissue injuries like exist on a spectrum. Like, they're not, it's not black and white like a bone. Like, either a bone is like healed or it's not, or it's not like, you know, swelling or a contusion, something that you can see with your eyes. Like, it's happening internally and it's very gray. It's not black and white. So recovery timelines can really vary greatly by individual, and they can be impacted by all kinds of things like travel, like how you sleep, what you're eating, how long the game is, catching your cleat, coming out of the batter's box. You know, like, there's so many things here that can kind of impact that. And as the club, you are relying on your objective, you know, benchmarks that you would have set with George Springer during spring training of strength and mobility and flexibility and all of these things. And you are measuring that using all kinds of sports science gadgets that can, you know, measure his speed and measure his strength and test those things. And then you're also marrying that with like subjective analysis from George Springer himself and what he's saying and how he feels. And it's kind of already been established that this is a guy who can play through some pretty serious stuff. And this is a guy who maybe doesn't subjectively have the best idea of like how injured that he is. So like, if objectively everything looks good and subjectively he's saying it looks good, sure, you're going to be like, all right, let's try to get you back into play. Knowing what we know now, yeah, they should have held him back and he shouldn't have come back when he did, and it was a mistake. But it's not like the Blue Jays are the only club who are experiencing this. Christian Yelich with the Brewers went through the exact same thing. Came off the IL, played one game, went right back on. You know, I think that every team across the game is trying to crack this sort of soft tissue injury nut as like MLB faces this injury Armageddon that they are going through this season. And I don't know that anybody is particularly good at it right now.
It's tough. It's super, super difficult. You look at the Dodgers, they're dealing with their own injuries. Cody Bellinger, of course, has barely played. Dustin May out with Tommy John. You think about Juan Soto in the Nationals, who's back, but he's not really playing. So certainly there are examples beyond the Toronto Blue Jays of injuries and players trying to come back. I do think, you know, with Springer and the Jays, there could have been a chance, you know, when he first went down with this injury, one that's ending up costing him basically one full month and who knows how much of a second month, there could have been a chance there to say, look, we don't know how long George is going to be sidelined. We hope he's back really soon, but there's a chance that this might linger a bit longer. And along those lines, when he left the game on the weekend, I want to say it was Sunday, then it was described as fatigue. Yeah, you know, I think it's probably a bit more than fatigue, right? Like, if you're going on the injured list. So I think there have been a couple opportunities from a information sharing standpoint to communicate that. But right, you know what? The bottom line is Springer is still a great major league player. He's still going to help this team. Let's not lose sight of that. He's still this team's second best hitter, and he's still going to play a good center field. And in the meantime, they've got Randall Grichuk, who's doing a very, very nice job at that position.
Yeah, you know, the messaging was a little nebulous at times, right, and ambiguous. But, you know, I think that's partly by design. And, like, you know, I can understand why it was like that. And I also think that Charlie Montoya was in a tough spot when he's doing his, like, White House press secretary thing, right? Because he's got to think about all these stakeholders when he's talking to us, right? Like, he's got to think about, like, George Springer and what information he wants out there. Like, it's his right to have his own personal medical details stay private. He's got to think about what his management wants out there. So his bosses in the front office, how they want things communicated publicly. He's got to think about what the training staff's telling him, what the PTs are saying. Like, Charlie Montoya doesn't have a doctorate in physical therapy, right? Like, he can't read the MRI, so he can only kind of recite what is being said. And, you know, fatigue in a sports science sense means something different than it does like in our world. It's not just like, you know, I could use a cup of coffee, like, didn't sleep so well last night, you know, like, it means muscle fatigue, right? So, like, that is a real thing. I think the fatigue argument just, yeah, it got a little thin when it was like day three of fatigue, right? Like, I understand it after one day, like, that's fine. But after, you know, day three of, well, no, I wouldn't say it's pain, and, you know, I wouldn't say it's an injury. Yeah, that's when you're kind of, you know, stretching things a little bit. You mentioned Randall Grichuk. I mean, yeah, you know, coming off of the game that I just covered here on Thursday, you know, had another big day. Like, he's not getting talked about a lot, but offensively, huge part of this team, the second best hitter on this club after Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to this point. Defensively, playing really well in center field, quietly just making every play. The Blue Jays just haven't had to worry about him at all this year. It's kind of funny, you know, he was the guy who got talked about a lot in spring as like the odd man out in the outfield, where he's going to find playing time. And now he's been like, here we are 5 weeks in, he's been absolutely crucial to this team. I guess the question, Ben, is, you know, we've all seen hot streaks from Randall Grichuk in the past. We've seen ups and downs. Are you buying it? You know, is this real?
I do buy it. I think that you look at some of the changes in approach and results, and that's what leads me to believe there's something different here. Randall Grichuk is striking out a lot less year by year, month by month, even. When you look at the end of last season, the beginning of this season, these aren't huge samples, but when you add them up, you get a trend line. And Nick Ashbourne at Sportsnet outlines this, so I urge anyone who wants to investigate more to check that piece out. But basically, if you're making less, if you're swinging and missing less, and you're striking out less, that opens the door for more contact. And we've seen a lot of that from Grichuk, some opposite field singles, some opposite field doubles. He's just putting the bat on the ball more. And so even though he's not walking more, he's getting on base more. And the overall offensive profile has improved, to say nothing of his defense, which, you know, he's making all the plays out there. So it adds up to a very good player. And I do think that what we're seeing now is, to some pretty considerable extent, sustainable.
It hasn't honestly been that small of a sample, particularly when you mention the strikeout rate. You know, Randall Grichuk is a guy who, for like the first five and a half seasons of his career, struck out at like a 30% rate. But then halfway through 19, he dropped off like 10 points, like down to around 20%. And he sustained that over the second half of 2019 through 2020. And now through his first, you know, it's probably 110 or so plate appearances after today, it might even be 115. Of 2021. So you add up that 2021, the 2020, and the second half of 2019, we're well over 600 plate appearances now of that strikeout rate being sustained. So yeah, I'd say that that's real. And like you said, he's still not walking much, and I doubt that he's ever going to be a guy who walks much, but he's making much better contact. And what's the one thing that Randall Grichuk has always done well throughout his entire MLB career? He's put the ball in play at a really high rate of speed, like always really strong exit velocities, and good things happen when you put the ball in play hard. And Randall Grichuk's always hit the ball hard. So that's a recipe for success right there. So yeah, I think these, you know, adjustments are real, and I think that they're sustainable, and I'm excited to see how that kind of develops over the rest of the year.
Well, it's a really good thing for the Jays, because, you know, with Springer sidelines, you know, you look at some of the other questions they've had to deal with on their team. The last thing they would have needed is to try to figure out center field on the fly. And is it Kevin Biggio? Is it Jonathan Davis? Like, this way they have Grichuk. He can play center basically every day, give them some really good production. And that's why this lineup is so good. It's because guys like Marcus Semien and Randall Grichuk, who are by no means the top performers in this lineup, can have games or stretches where they perform at a high level. And then that just lengthens everything. And, you know, the Jays obviously hope that Vlad, Bo, and eventually Springer are the driving force behind it. But to have such a strong supplementary cast is why this team, you know, should be at the top of the American League when it comes to runs scored.
Any other players or Blue Jays just on-field notes you want to touch on before we move to something else?
Well, I do think we should touch on the catching situation. Alejandro Kirk, of course, hit two home runs over the weekend.
Feels like a while ago.
Yeah, it's a bit of a blur of games once you get into this full six-month season. So at some point, he hit two home runs, and then the very next game ended up having to leave, and that we now know that he is going to miss upwards of a month with a hip flexor issue. And so this, I guess, kind of runs counter to what I was just saying when it comes to the length of this lineup, because the catching position has not been good and does not project to be good going forward. I mean, you look at Kirk, and it didn't start all that great for Kirk, but by the time he was done that first month of the season, his OPS was over 800. I mean, that's a great, great outcome for a rookie catcher in his first month in the major leagues. That is not easy to do. And no. Kirk did his part. But now that he's gone for at least a month, you look at Danny Jansen, he did homer in the finale against the Athletics on Thursday. But still, it's been a very, very rough start for Danny Jansen. And behind that, all right, Reese McGuire, Riley Adams, you're not expecting a ton there. Certainly, you know, trading for someone is tough this time of year. It's tough. It almost becomes a bit more of a National League lineup. And, you know, maybe that'll change. And, you know, if so, we'll certainly talk about it. But at this point, you look at that number nine spot and what they've gotten from the catcher, it's by far the worst in baseball. It's not close. It's by far the worst offensive outcome in baseball. And I know it's a defensive position, but you don't want to be number 30 out of 30.
Yeah, that catching depth that the Blue Jays had got real thin real quick as soon as they had one injury. You mentioned it, Danny Jansen having a really rough start to the year offensively. That home run that he hit here on Thursday, that was his third hit in 51 plate appearances, not hitting the ball well at all. We do need to give him credit for being one of the better defensive catchers in baseball so far this year, like really strong defensive numbers behind the plate. And you look at how good the Blue Jays pitching staff has been with like some pretty underwhelming arms and some pretty off the radar guys. I think Danny Jansen deserves credit for that and for how well he has handled pitchers on this pitching staff. Like, he has a role to play in their success. So at least the Blue Jays are getting that, but not a lot offensively from him. And then, yeah, the secondary catcher right now on this roster is Reese McGuire, a guy who passed completely through waivers a month ago. So it's not great. You know, Tyler Flowers off the market now, went to the Atlanta Braves. I mean, Jonathan Lucroy is still out there. Caleb Joseph's a free agent now. The Blue Jays could go and grab one of these veteran guys, but doesn't really look like they're going to. Like, looks like they're going to roll with Jansen and McGuire. So clearly, I mean, they're okay with what they're getting right now, with it, you know, being pretty much an offensive zero in that spot right now, as long as they are getting that steady, capable defense. Yeah, I mean, can you argue with the fact that they're two games above 500 right now and have really strong run differential? You know, like, can you punt on one spot in the lineup? I don't know, but I think we might be about to find out.
If any team can do it, I mean, it would be a team like the Blue Jays or the Yankees, the Dodgers, one of these teams that just has elite production elsewhere. But that being said, you don't want to put yourself in that position. You think about teams, right, how they look at these things. They tend to be, I'm not talking about the Jays in particular here, but they tend to be so obsessed with finding every edge that they can. And so, all right, you've got a third baseman who can hit but can't field. How can we find a way to get some defense? You've got a catcher who can field but can't hit. How do we find a way to try to, you know, figure that out? Because anytime you've got a zero, whether it's defensively, offensively, from someone on the pitching staff, in a sense, it's like, that's horrible because you're getting zero. You're 30th in the league. That's not good. In another sense, it's like, okay, you can improve there. So the first step is to try to see if you can improve it internally. And maybe they can. We'll see. I mean, certainly with, you know, the case of Bo Bichette at shortstop, he's improved his defense internally. That happened gradually, not perfectly, but he has improved compared to what we saw in the first few weeks. And that's something that happened internally. In other cases, it's going to require external help. And I'm not saying catcher, because I actually think that's probably the toughest position to upgrade in season, but they're going to need pitching. Like, there's no quite, as I look at this pitching staff and I watch them navigate game to game and every answer, you know, it's not Charlie Montoyo's fault, but, you know, we ask him, hey, who's pitching this next weekend? I know you just posed that question to him a few minutes ago. And it's like, there's usually a TBD in there. So that's a sign that this pitching staff doesn't have the stability, doesn't have the upside that a contending team would like to have. It's not a crisis. It's totally normal. Tons of teams are going through this at this point in the season, but you start to wonder, how can they improve? Whether that's catcher, pitcher, defense, you're always looking for those little edges.
Yeah, the rotation's been kind of like day to day for basically the entire season, right? Like, it works kind of in like 2-day increments. If we find out who the pitchers are for the next 3 games, it's like, whoa, you know, like, wow, this is incredible. I will say for Danny Jansen, like, he is seeing the most pitches per plate appearance on the team, and he has one of the best rates of not chasing on the team. So those are good things. He's just not doing damage on the pitches that he's getting in the zone. You know, he's not getting any you know, good luck on balls in play. But even if he had like gotten some, you know, some good BABIP luck, it still wouldn't look tremendous. He just needs to do more damage when he gets pitches on the plate. He's not doing that. And that's something like Alejandro Kirk was doing in a really big way. Like, I can't tell you how impressed I was with the times that like he would fall behind 0-2 and still like find a way to get to a pitch on the plate and absolutely punish it, you know, in a pitcher's count. Like, it just really is impressive for a guy that young to just be that poised and calm and have that low of a heart rate in two strike counts. Like, hitters always talk about being jumpy in two strike counts and feeling that anxiety. You know, you got guys who change their entire setup. Bo Bichette keeps his foot on the ground, right? We've seen Kevin Biggio and Teoscar Hernandez experiment, you know, with similar things. Like, guys do weird stuff with two strikes, and like two strikes just does not seem to bother Alejandro Kirk. So like, credit to the kid, man. The bat plays
for sure. I think, you know, with all of these offensive performances, you look for those little signs and you look for the way pitchers are pitching them and adjusting to them. The one thing with Jansen that I would have, you know, a little concern with is if pitchers are realizing he's not hitting, he's not barreling balls up, well, at a certain point they might just start attacking him in the same way that they would attack a pitcher in the National League and just go after him with strike one, strike two, prove that you can hit it. And, you know, much in the same way that we see pitchers throwing a lot of sliders off the plate outside to Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and forcing him to prove that he can hit that. And he's not really doing it. But, you know, that's always the cat and mouse game with pitchers and hitters. That's certainly nothing new for Danny Jansen even. But, you know, if I'm like your standard reliever who throws 95 with a nasty slider, like, I'm not that scared of Danny Jansen. You know, I think that pitchers at this point might start forcing him to prove that he can do this.
Well, particularly when my other options are, you know, facing Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you know, when Springer's healthy, Marcus Semien, Teoscar Hernandez, Randall Grichuk. You know, that's not a lot of guys that you want to really like attack on the plate in this lineup. The one thing we've seen with Danny Jansen is he can run into one, is the thing. You know, he can hit some pretty big home runs. We saw it in the playoffs last year. We saw it just today. Like, that was a rocket that he hit on a hung slider from Fires. So, like, you know, that's the difference between, not that I have to explain this to anybody, but that's the difference between Danny Jansen and a pitcher in the NL.
Yes.
Danny Jansen can square the ball up, right?
For sure.
And he has pretty good pitch recognition. And clearly, as a catcher, like, he understands well what pitchers are trying to do, and he understands game calling. So if he's recognizing that he's going to be getting like hittable pitches early in a plate appearance, I don't think that he's going to Kevin Biggio it and just look at them. Like, I think he will probably attack them, and we've seen he has the ability to hit them very hard. So I don't know, man, maybe that's what he needs, Ben, is that approach that you're suggesting.
Well, you know what, he's a catcher, right? He's thinking about pitch calling all the time, so he might think, how would I pitch myself? And so he might be ready for those fastballs if they do come right down the middle at 93 or 94. And maybe at that point, his whole offensive profile changes.
Let's talk about Roberto Alomar before we take the break. And I'm sure that all Blue Jays fans are well aware by now that Roberto Alomar has been placed on MLB's ineligible list. And the Blue Jays have severed ties with Roberto Alomar, and they will be taking his name off of Level of Excellence, and they will be removing his banner from the Rogers Center following an allegation of sexual misconduct, after which there was an investigation by an independent third party. The Blue Jays, MLB, reviewed the findings of that investigation, chose to take this action. Then it's, you know, we've had like, I don't know, almost a week now to kind of, you know, mull this over. How are you feeling about, you know, how that played out, you know, and how fans should feel about Roberto Alomar going forward?
Well, you know, certainly big news for the organization, for Major League Baseball. You know, when it comes to how fans, you know, feel about this, that's always going to be an individual question, and one that, you know, everyone relates to differently. You know, how they grew up, whether Alomar was a part of their fandom, whether he wasn't, you know, that's probably going to vary. I think for me, the starting point with this is always just the fact that there was a victim in this. And so, you know, that's something that we don't want to lose sight of as we're talking about Alomar and the consequences and where to go from here for the Blue Jays or Major League Baseball. So that's probably a starting point. And then from there, it's also worth noting, as you did, that there was an investigation here. This was something that I think hit the news cycle pretty quickly and unexpectedly, in the sense that it's not as though there were these incremental reports of, hey, this might happen, or Major League Baseball's looking into something. Within the span of about 4 hours, everything broke. And then it kind of reached a resolution very quickly as well, with the Blue Jays saying that they are severing all ties, effective immediately, Major League Baseball effectively doing the same, and the Hall of Fame saying that they're going to keep his plaque up. So we kind of got those answers within a very, very brief period of time. But I would just underscore, as I'm sure most of our listeners are aware, but just underscore that, you know, that doesn't mean that it was a quick process when it came to the investigation itself. And Alomar would have had the chance to present his perspective to Major League Baseball and to the Blue Jays. Due diligence was done, and yet this was the conclusion that the Blue Jays and Major League Baseball arrived at. So I think under the circumstances, and we don't know the details, we don't need to know the details, but I think under the circumstances, it's the right decision, because when it comes to something like the level of excellence and what that represents, well, of course, there's an on-field component. And of course, Alomar was a great player. He was integral to this franchise's first World Series and second World Series. So that doesn't change. But when it comes to excellence and what that represents, I don't know that, well, I do know that this is not the kind of behavior and the kind of person that you want representing excellence for your organization.
Well, and yeah, and those actions really say it all, right? Like you mentioned, yeah, being, you know, removed from the level of excellence at Rogers Center, like we're talking about, like, you know, infrastructure work that is going to be done on a stadium as a result of this. We're talking about, you know, lowering the banner of a Hall of Famer. Like right. We're talking about a player who, you know, is really like wrapped up in kind of the fabric of this organization. Like his name is on concession stands. You know, there are boxes of unsold merchandise that will never go sold there. You know, the T12 tournament. I mean, this is a lot of work that is not done lightly and is not done to appease anyone. It is not being done, as you mentioned, as a result of public pressure. Like it is being done like purely by the Blue Jays' own volition because of what they learned about what happened with Roberto Alomar. You can extend that to the ineligible list. And I don't know, you know, maybe some people aren't that familiar with it. This is the most severe action MLB can take. Like this is the greatest consequence that MLB can dole out. Like anything beyond that would have to be legal in nature. In the last 30 years, only 8 people have been placed on this list. Like it's extremely uncommon. So like this is very serious action that is being taken. And I think that that tells you everything about, you know, what MLB and the Blue Jays found as a result of this independent third party investigation. A complaint of sexual misconduct was lodged, an investigation was carried out, the findings were reviewed, and consequences were levied. That's the way you want it to go. You know, this didn't go backwards. This wasn't, you know, a social media campaign. This wasn't, you know, didn't come out in a Jeff Passan article or something like that. Like this was all handled privately, away from, you know, public view. We're not going to find out the details of what happened. We're not going to know who the victim is. I don't want to know the details. I don't want to know who the victim is. This is something that happened to her that she did not choose to have happen to her, and something that she has had to deal with for 7 years, right? I mean, that, you know, can you imagine like the stress and the anxiety and how hard it is to come forward about something like this? And you know, how often women do come forward about things like this and they aren't believed, and they, you know, the due diligence isn't done, particularly in a world like baseball, and particularly, you know, somebody in a position of power like Roberto Alomar was in. So, you know, if there is any sort of like silver lining to this, it's that, you know, this seems to have been handled in the way that you would want it to be handled. And we seem to have arrived at a resolution here that is satisfying somewhat. Not that you could ever be satisfied, because it like is terrible that this happened, but is at least somewhat satisfying for the party. You'll never be able to change what she lived through and whatever happened, but you know, at the very least, like the process here seems to have been sound. And so the cancel culture people can you know, get the hell out of here, because that's not what's happening.
Right. Yeah. No, of course. And we don't know exactly how these actions were taken by the victim. All we know is how the Blue Jays chose to handle it, Major League Baseball. And that seems like a good response for now.
Yes, absolutely. Let's step away. But when we continue, we will wrap up everything else that's going on with the Toronto Blue Jays here on At the Letters. It continues on at the letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson Smith, our producers Mike Tassoni and Christian Ryan. And it is time now for Keeping It Light, presented by Miller Lite. Fun question for you here, Ben. If you could add one former Blue Jay to the roster for 2021 and only 2021, who would it be?
Well, there are some good choices here. To peel back the curtain a little bit, we have at least taken a preliminary look at some of the candidates before diving in. And in the case of the pitching side of things, you have arms like Taiwan Walker, you have arms like Marcus Stroman. Joe Musgrove, of course, is having a really good season. He never played for the major league version of the Blue Jays, but he was, of course, in their system, a former draft pick of the Blue Jays. And you've got position players like Gio Urshela, Josh Donaldson. So you've got actually some pretty decent choices. And I think the player who would most benefit this team would be Joe Musgrove. He's off to a great start with the Padres. He is really pitching well. I think that this team clearly needs some more help in the rotation. That's not a need that's going to go away at any point in the 2021 season. It would be a welcome addition should this team make the playoffs. So to me, it's Musgrove. I think he's the best option out of that whole group.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would say don't sleep on Kendall Graveman, who is having a spectacular season out of the bullpen. Don't sleep on Justin Smoke, who's tearing it up in NPB. It's funny, man. There's so many ex-Blue Jays out there, right? When you post this question is your idea. And it's like, and now everywhere I look, I see ex-Blue Jays. Like, I was watching the Mets the other day, and I was just like, hey, there's Jonathan Villar, like, you know, freelancing around the bases, and Kevin Pillar hitting homers, and Stroman and Walker in the dugout. Yeah. And they've got, like, Sean Reed Foley and Aaron Loop coming out of the bullpen. Maybe, hey, that's just made me remember. Maybe I want Noah Syndergaard, depending on how he looks when he comes back.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Still working his way back. I think June is the target for him.
So, yeah, but maybe I want to roll the dice and say, I want a, like, quote-unquote rested as you could be coming off of an injury, but, like, rested Noah Syndergaard coming back.
I'd take Musgrove still. But, you know, you look at the Brewers, too. The Brewers have, like, half a lineup of Blue Jays. They got Billy McKinney, Derek Fisher. They got Vogelbach. Travis Shaw. I mean, those guys don't rise to the level of some of the other names we're talking about. But when I looked at the Brewers lineup one day recently, I was like, this is half Blue Jays. These are like the Blue Jays discards. It's like, you know how the Dodgers like kind of have these players and the Jays kind of end up with them maybe a year or two after? The Brewers are like that of the Blue Jays. You know, they pick up the guys that don't no longer fit on the Blue Jays roster.
No, there was a couple seasons there where the Blue Jays were just following around like the Houston Astros and just like picking up the like pieces, the scraps that fell off their 40-man roster.
And then now they got Ryu and they got Stripling and they got tons of former Astros. Totally.
So, I think it's got to be Musgrove. I thought about Matt Boyd just to be different. And I thought about Stroman. The thing is, those guys don't really strike anybody out. And just with the Blue Jays defense, I think you got to strike guys out. So I want Joe Musgrove, who like is exactly what this club requires right now, which is like every time out, he's going, you know, five or six with, you know, 8 Ks or something and, you know, allowing 2 runs on 4 hits, right? Like he's striking out like 12.5 K per nine. That's the best fit on the pitching side and position player side. I would probably take Josh Donaldson, even though he's not quite having the year that Urshela is having. Let me get that MVP third baseman in this lineup. That would be a lot of fun.
Wow. I mean, yeah, positionally, I agree that he would help. And he would help the Jays, of course. But I think Urshela is better. I think Urshela is the better player right now. So I would have Urshela as the runner-up to me. Musgrove 1, Urshela 2. I think and maybe 3 might be someone like Stroman because...
Yeah, we get Stroman to play third base?
He could probably do a pretty decent job of playing third base.
He played second in college.
He could do it if any pitcher could. If any pitcher could. But yeah, there's some good ones to choose from. It's kind of fun. And you know, you do see a lot of them out there. Like you said, when you're tuning into different games, you see a ton of former Jays out there.
They're all over the place. Kendall Graveman out of this bullpen would be pretty sweet right now, too. Props to him for the year that he's having. Hey, look, here's the thing, though, Ben. Like, if you just want to add a starting pitcher to this club right now who's going to strike out, like, 12 dudes in 6 innings, There's like two of those guys at AAA right now. You can pick either one of them. They're both stretched out. They're both young. They both throw hard as hell. They're both great competitors. They're both like 6'6", 6'7", 250, 260 pounds. Like, they're both absolute animals. You can have, Nate Pearson or Alec Manoah. They're both already here.
They are making their way to the Toronto Blue Jays, and Pearson will be here pretty soon. I think Manoah at some point this year. You know, as we record this, Manoah just completed his AAA debut. 6 innings, 12 strikeouts, 2 hits allowed, no walks. Incredible debut. You almost literally could not ask for more from Alec Manoah.
He wants to end this with a strikeout.
Absolutely, and he's got a chance.
Can he get Geddes for the first time? The 1-2. He does! Fastball tip back. Power. And dominance from Alec Manoah. 2 strikeouts in the 6th. He leaves with 12.
Really impressive by him. At the same time, we have seen what the difference is between AAA and the majors. And I mean, Nate Pearson, when he came up last year, he had all kinds of hype and he still struggled. So these hitters are better than the guys that Manoah faced. And I am extremely intrigued to see what they can do. But at the same time, I'm not just going to say that it's a foregone conclusion that they can copy and paste those results from AAA.
No. And we saw with Pearson, who like dominated the minors and didn't walk anybody in the minors, got to the majors and all of a sudden was walking guys. Right. And now he's going through actually like a little bit of a mechanical tweak. It's certainly not an overhaul, but he is like making some mechanical adjustments to be a bit more fluid. And to be, just a little bit less kind of forceful in his delivery and just let his natural velocity carry, hopefully be in the zone more often and also avoid injury. You know, we talked about the uncertainty of soft tissue injuries when Nate Pearson was coming back from his adductor thing this spring, getting off of a mound. He felt fine. Sports science folks said he was fine. Everything objectively, subjectively looked good. Gone a mound and he wasn't there quite yet, right? Like, soft tissue injuries are a fickle beast. You know, you can have these setbacks like George Springer did, like Christian Yelich did, like Nate Pearson did. So, you know, clearly the Blue Jays saw something and Nate Pearson saw something as well in his delivery where they felt, all right, we need to iron this out and smooth this out because you're just going to continue getting hurt if you pitch like this. So I'm interested to see the results of that process. Looks like it went pretty well in AAA the other day. As you said, huge jump from AAA to the majors, obviously. Pretty big jump, though, from high A to AAA for Alec Manoah to go from like also not pitching for 19 months prior in a real live game. Like, I get it. The alt site, they try to recreate those environments, but it's not the same thing as the adrenaline and the intensity of a real actual game and facing like the advanced hitters that you're going to encounter at AAA. Like, I just thought that Alec Manoah's placement even at AAA, forget the results in his first start, his placement at that level really spoke volumes about how the organization feels about him and how quickly he could get to the majors. Like, there could be a scenario here where, like, we've kind of been talking about him as like maybe August, September guy out of the bullpen if the Blue Jays need somebody to come in and throw gas. Well, what happens if Alec Manoah goes out and has like 8, 10, 12 really strong starts in AAA? There's nowhere else for him to go. It's not like you can bump him up a level. The only place to go is to the majors. If that happens, maybe he's making starts for the Blue Jays at Salem Field.
It's a possibility, which, I mean, there are a lot of possibilities, right? So when I say that, I mean that in a broad sense. A lot of things are possible in this world and in this baseball season.
Couch, but Ben, just couch.
I'm not trying to couch. I honestly, like, I think that there's a real chance that Manoah, I mean, we've seen him do it once. So it's not crazy to think that he could do this again. What I mean to say is by possible, I don't mean likely. But Manoah is someone who clearly has a lot of potential to make an impact on this team. And to me, the number is probably 4 or 5. I think that if he does this, and again, 12 strikeouts, 2 hits, no walks in the course of 6 innings. If he does that or something resembling that for another 4 or 5 outings, I think at that point, it's totally appropriate to bring him to the major leagues. Now, I don't think you do it after 2 outings like that. I don't even think you do it after 3. But to me, the number would be 4 or 5. And of course, if it's not quite to that level, you adjust accordingly and you figure out what makes sense for him, for the team, for his long term, for the short term, balancing all those things.
Well, and the club has had to kind of like assess how it values the innings he threw in spring and how it values the work he did at the alt site last year, and even the work at the alt site over the last month that we didn't see, but we are told was very impressive. And I think they have clearly like arrived at the conclusion that they're very valuable and they're very real. Otherwise, they wouldn't have started him at AAA. They could have started him at AA pretty easily, and nobody would have blinked. If Alec Manoah started at AA, nobody would have said, why isn't this guy at AAA? It would have been totally Simeon Woods Richardson starting at AA, right? Like, it would have been totally fine. But I think that his placement suggests that the club is saying, no, we're like, we feel like he's pretty advanced. You can see why just talking to him, Ben, like how confident is this kid, right? Like, he's not scared. You know, he is checking every box at this point. Like, it's very hard to think of something that he is not doing well enough. Like with Nate Pearson, like if you really wanted to like poke holes and search for faults in the top pitching prospect in baseball, you could say, well, he hasn't been that consistent with his fastball command, hasn't been in the zone that much. Yeah, he's had some injury concerns. You don't have those for Alec Manoah. Like, it is hard to find faults. So like, look, if he goes on the kind of run that you're describing, 6-8 really strong starts at AAA, and the stuff is playing the way it is, it's going to be hard for the Blue Jays to make a case not to bring him to the majors.
And I don't think they would. I think they would call him up before that. Yeah. What's your number as far as, you know, let's say really impressive AAA starts that he would have to make?
To me, it comes down to what's the need at the majors. Like, that's always the thing.
I think the need will be there. I think that's safe to say. I don't know.
Maybe by that point, they've traded for your boy, Kyle Gibson, and Kevin Gossman's a Blue Jay, and Ross Stripling is rolling.
Let's be more realistic here. Like, that, those things are not going to happen. They might happen, like, that could very well happen in July, but it's not going to happen in May or June. So, right. I mean, with that in mind, like, do you think 4 or 5 is enough, or would you want to see more from
him? I would think it would be more so in like the 7, 8, 9 range to me. I don't think the 4 or 5 would be enough. Like, the Blue Jays are pretty cautious with starting pitchers, right? It's one thing with a position player, you know, like you can rush up Alejandro Kirk, right? But with a starting pitcher, the Blue Jays really do prioritize the development there. It's the only thing with a reliever, right? Like a reliever, like who cares? Yeah, get them to the majors, right? Like, we see relievers come out of the draft straight to the majors last season. So like, I just think with starting pitching, they are going to prioritize the development and be as careful as possible and try to find the best entry point as possible. But look, Alec Manoah is in a position to force the issue. And clearly he's gone out tonight and done so, right? Like, he's taken a great first step in doing that. He is in a position to, like, as the Blue Jays would say, make this decision for them. They have challenged him with the level, and through one start, who knows what happens from here. Remember how much everybody was raving about Nate Pearson last spring, even after, remember his first start last year in the majors and just raving about him and how great it was. And we're recording a video the next morning, remember, and like drooling over 99 mile an hour fastballs on the outside black and everything. Obviously things change from there, and things could be different in like only a week. But as things stand right now, he's taken a great first step towards forcing this issue.
For sure. And I think, you know, it's funny with Pearson because the luster is off of him. Relatively speaking, I think if you were to ask most Blue Jays fans, they might be a little more excited about Manoah at this point than Pearson, which, fair enough. I mean, Manoah's definitely doing his part on that when it comes to the performance. But worth remembering with Pearson, sometimes it takes a long time, and sometimes these guys never work out. So Pearson might be a total bust. That's on the table. But he also might be their best pitcher within 3 months. So it's interesting to watch with both these guys. And, you know, when they're this young and they have relatively little experience at the pro level, and certainly at the major league level, you get a lot of possibilities. You get a lot of different potential outcomes. And so it is really interesting to see how that unfolds.
Pearson could have a really cool little comeback arc this year, I think, with fans. If he's healthy and he's feeling good and he's in the zone, that's all he's been missing, really, is health and location, which are huge things. I say that as if like that's all he's been missing. Those are massive things. But like, people have kind of forgotten, oh, hey, this guy sits in the high 90s with a changeup that is like harder than Hunjin Ryu's fastball, and a slider that moves in one direction, and a curveball that moves in the other, and he can tunnel them off of his fastball really well, and he throws all of his pitches to both sides of the plate. And I mean, like, the people have just forgotten how good that he is. I mean, in his last outing at the alt site, like working with new mechanics, like trying to make an adjustment. He hit 101 like casually in his third or fourth inning, you know, like late in his outing when he's still getting built up. That was like his 65 pitch outing, right? So he's a guy who gets stronger as the game goes on. He's a guy who, like, I just think people have forgotten how good he is. So if he's healthy and if he's in the zone, massive ifs, but if those things are there, he could have a cool little run here in 2021. And I wonder if we don't actually see him in the majors before long.
Oh yeah. I don't think it'll be long for Pearson at all. Yeah. And yet, even with those two guys in the minor leagues, forcing the issue in the case of Manoa, definitely recovering and building in the case of Pearson, even then, still got to be on the lookout for starting pitching, relief pitching, got to find ways to improve this pitching staff. And this, I guarantee at the trade deadline, that's going to be something this team is looking at. They should already be thinking about that because that need will exist.
Is there anyone else you wanted to touch on? I got one more thing, but I'll give you the floor if you got anything.
I think that covers most of the main storylines. I'll just say Vladdy continues doing his thing. With that, I'll turn it over to you and your guy.
My guy. I've got a lineup. I don't have a guy. I want to talk about the New Hampshire Fisher Cats lineup because like it is going to be fun to watch this insanely loaded like prospect team. Like this could be like the New Hampshire team that had Vladdy and Bo and Biggio and like Romano was on the team and John Schneider was the manager. Like that New Hampshire Fisher Cats team that won a championship in, I want to say it was 18, whatever the year was. Like it's the same deal, man. They're lining. They got a lineup that is like Martin, Groshans, Otto Lopez, Chavez Young, Gabby Moreno. And like, it is just like murderer's row of top prospects. And it's just going to be really fun to watch that team go. Like in their first game of the season, they just like teed off on this Red Sox prospect. And just, you know, Austin Martin just immediately like hit the ground running with, you know, whippy big bat speed, high exit velos, you know, running around the bases, making things happen. It's gonna be really fun to watch them defensively because Martin and Groshans are gonna be trading starts at shortstop. Right. And when Martin is playing short, Groshans gonna play third. When Groshans is playing short, Martin's gonna play center. So it's just gonna be really interesting to watch that. Chavez Young is a hella fun defender to watch, big arm, like active guy in the outfield. Gabby Moreno, really, you know, highly regarded catching prospect on the come up, already on the 40 man. And oh, by the way, Simeon Woods Richardson pitches for that team and had himself a pretty decent little outing here on Thursday as well. So like just a lot of reasons to watch that club. They're going to be a lot of fun.
It's nice to have minor league baseball back and just have those different storylines to follow. I mean, I know these guys were playing at the alt sites in 2020, and it's not that they stopped playing baseball, but it stopped being available to us. And so it's nice to have the box scores, some little highlights here and there, and just get a better sense of what's going on with these minor leaguers, because it was so important to this current team to develop many of the stars that are now playing every day. And that's not going to stop. I mean, to stay good, they're going to need those guys to come up. And so it is nice to be able to watch and follow what they're up to.
Simeon Woods Richardson, 8 Ks over 4 innings here on Thursday.
It's a good sign.
Don't sleep. If they'd let him go 6, he would have gotten his 12 like Manoa did. But maybe he wasn't quite as efficient. He did walk one guy. So Manoa's gone there. Manoa didn't walk anybody. Yeah, lots of interesting minor league scoreboard watching this year for us and for you Blue Jays fans. Thank you so much for listening. As always, want to thank our producers, Mike DeSoni and Christian Ryan. Ben's on Twitter at the Nicholson Smith. My name's Arden Zwelling. Taking us out this week is a Montreal-based singer, songwriter, and producer who just debuted as a solo artist with his latest single, Step from the Limelight. Here's Ormiston.